it's a beautiful day, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
A little better than last week with the cold. I'm not going to make any Eagles jokes today. It was a good day for the Eagles, you know. I teased the Eagles a little bit, but, you know, Pennsylvania win is still a Pennsylvania win. And Delaware was originally part of Pennsylvania, if you know your history. We were the lower three counties. And although every day there's a parade every year to celebrate the fact that we're no longer a part of Pennsylvania. And ironically, it's right at the statue where William Penn landed, and we go, "We're not part of you anymore." It's a strange history. there's a little bit of excitement with certain things in life. Like, for instance, at the end of a football game, you know, it seems sometimes like those last minutes can take forever. You know what I mean? Like, you're like, "Oh, it's only a minute 20 left in the game. I'll hurry up and watch this." And 45 minutes later, you're like, "How am I still watching this minute?" Or it's kind of like when it finally is over and it hopefully the outcome is what you wanted, there's this excitement, right? Well, we started the book of Mark, and I kind of feel like this is the point where the exciting part starts to begin. Because there's not that the other stuff wasn't good, right? You're like, "Oh yeah, why'd you preach for 2 weeks on something that didn't?" No, but there's this beginning part of the Gospel of Mark, which is sort of setting up this moment where Jesus comes onto the stage and he comes into his full the ministry of what he's going to be doing. So we're gonna, if you're following along in Mark chapter 1, starting in verse 16, we'll be reading, and it says this. It says, "As Jesus walked beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw Simon and his brother Andrew casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. 'Come, follow me,' Jesus said, 'and I will send you out. I will make you fishers of men.'" Anyone ever hear that? But we're reading from the New Living Translation, and so it tripped me up a little bit. So Jesus said, "And I will send you out to fish for people." And you know, you picture this, the Sea of Galilee. Now, when I think sea, what do you think of? You think a big body of water. I tend to think salt water. Like the ocean, like the sea. I picture an old man by the sea. I don't know what I picture. Sitting on the dock by the bay, something like that. but the Sea of Galilee was actually, it's a giant freshwater lake, and it's like 11 or 12 miles by 6 miles wide, depending on how you measure it, probably depending on the water level of the day. And in Scripture, it gets called a bunch of different things. So I know, it's funny because that can kind of trip you up if you don't know your history. And so you might hear it called the Sea of Tiberias, the Sea of Gennesar. That was in Josephus, if you're reading Josephus. the Lake of Gennesaret, the Sea of Galilee here. And so it's this big, giant freshwater lake. And so Jesus is walking along it, and he comes across this guy named Simon. Now, Simon, anybody know who Simon is? He's the same as Peter. I know it throws you off. Again, things have the same guy, different names. He'll also be called Simon Peter. So if you know who Peter is, and I like Peter, because Peter, on the one hand, he says these really cool things that we're going to get to, but he also does really stupid things. And I like that, because there's days where I feel like I'm doing well with the faith, and there's some days where I feel like I'm doing stupid things. And so I take comfort in Peter. Peter, one minute, Jesus is like, you know, "Hey, you're the rock upon which I'm going to build the church." And the next minute, he's like, "Get behind me, Satan." So if you're a little inconsistent, you have good days and bad days, Peter's a good guy. It makes you feel a little better about yourself. And so we have this guy named Simon, and it says, you know, and his brother Andrew, and they're casting a net, not castanets. Sorry. but you know, they're basically standing, and they could have been standing on the side of the sea doing it. They could have been like standing in a boat. It's not real specific. We kind of get different images for what this looks like, but they're chucking their nets into the lake because they were fishermen. And if you don't know much about fishermen, fishermen fish. Okay, now you've learned something new. You can bring that home, tell people, you know, fishermen fish. Now, and I think we get maybe, you know, we're not really, we're near the ocean. That's one of the great things about living in Delaware, is because you can be at the beach very easily, but we don't have to have the traffic of the beach all the time in Dover, so it's nice. 45 minutes, well, maybe an hour, depending on the time of year. This time of year, 35 minutes probably. No one's on the road. No one's going to the beach this time of year, but actually, it's the best time of the year to go to the beach. It's a little cold, a little icy, but it's beautiful and abandoned. Not as much in the old days, though. Now more and more people live there year-round. And so anyway, so you kind of picture this fisherman. Now, we lived in Maine, and we had, like, people with, like, lobster boats and different things in our church. And so we knew fishermen. But I think, you know, you might picture, like, around here, guy on a bass boat. You know, and we live near a lake, and so we see the guys in the bass boats all the time, which is creepy because we live right by the lake, and sometimes it looks like they're just standing in our yard. So there's like a shirtless redneck in my yard, and I'm like, what is? And I'm like, oh, that's just someone in a boat. Hey, Bubba. And, you know, I remember growing up, people fished a lot, and people would eat the fish in the lake. Now we found out, oh, that'll probably kill you. Like, you can only eat, like, one a month or something, which tells me there's enough stuff in it that you probably shouldn't eat any. I'm just saying. Unless it's, like, zombie apocalypse and we have to eat them. But I remember, like, as a kid, there'd always be guys, like, sitting. They would sit on a big bucket full of water. Anyone have this, see this around here? And they'd, like, catch a bunch of, like bluegill, like the little fish that are easy to catch. They call them panfish for a reason. You can fry them and eat them. And I remember Bob and I did that one time on a trip because we were really hungry. but you know, they throw them in the bucket. So maybe you picture that. But this is like more giant net. They're catching fish. It's not just, you know, catch a fish so I can survive, but this is like big business there in that area. This was like a big enterprise. And so we don't exactly know. People like make all these assumptions and different things because, you know, Simon and Andrew here, we'll see in a minute, we'll get a couple other fishermen there. They try to figure out whether they had money or not or anything. But this is big commercial enterprise. This was like what they did for a living. They, you know, possibly even they were managers. You know, they had people working under them. It was a big operation in this whole area. And then so Jesus comes along and he says, follow me. Now, this is unusual. If you know the history and context, it's not unusual to follow a rabbi. Now, for us, it would be weird. If I walked around, you know, like, because essentially what I do teaching is like being a rabbi in some ways. It would be weird if I just walked by your place of employment and was like, hey, follow me. And I walked out. You'd be like, that was creepy and weird. but most of you probably wouldn't follow me. Some of you that did, I'm a little concerned about. But so this is like a typical kind of thing. So it would be typical to follow a rabbi. But what's not typical is usually you ask to follow the rabbi. The rabbi didn't ask you to follow them. So this is a little unusual in that. And so Jesus is kind of flipping it. And it'd be like, you know, in those days, it was kind of like applying for a job. You'd ask to, you know, follow the rabbi. He'd kind of test you, ask some interview questions, decide, you know, hey, can this guy hack it? Is this guy got the right stuff? And they would choose it. And, you know, so Jesus is going along, and he's really picking teams. Now, some of you remember dodgeball. I don't think you're allowed to play dodgeball anymore in school. It was a great sport, because if you can dodge a ball, you can dodge a wrench. No. We dodge a wrench. But some of you get that, some of you don't. Some of you are going to throw a wrench at me later. Anyway, you know, I remember as a kid, you'd pick teams, and, you know, whether you were, it was tough, because when I was younger, I kind of, like, didn't get picked. Oh, that's sad, right? But then as I got older and, you know, got a little more developed, then I got picked faster, so it felt better. But, you know, you tend to, when you pick teams, what do you pick? Yeah, you pick the people who, for whatever, you know, like if we were picking teams for dodgeball, I'm going to pick people who have a baseball background. I might love you, you might be my friend, but a guy who can really throw a ball is useful in dodgeball. You know, if we were picking a chess team, I would pick people maybe a little different than the people. You know, maybe you could play baseball and still, but I'd pick people who kind of like think strategy and everything. It's kind of like fantasy football, which I don't understand. I understand the concept, but I don't play it. Anyone play fantasy football? It's just a lot of statistics to remember. I just like to watch football. I don't want to analyze football, but those of you who play fantasy football, it's like you got to pick this running back because he has this. And so basically you're picking the best of the best because you want like the most points and everything. And so, you know, that's kind of what this. And so it's funny in a way that Jesus, because you would think he'd pick the best team, right? But what does he go pick? He picks some guys who are fishermen. Now, it's great that they have a business. It's great that they're, you know, employed. I mean, he's not like picking a guy off the street who doesn't do anything. But he picks people who are maybe not what you think of religious elite. You know, you would think you'd pick somebody who's maybe really schooled in the Torah, maybe someone who's really knowledgeable. And so instead, Jesus goes to them. And it's kind of funny to me because I think sometimes we would think, I would naturally pick somebody, you know, like if I humanly thinking, someone who kind of knows the scriptures, you know, the Hebrew Bible, I mean, that's a lot of pages. They would actually memorize that. You know, some of you are like, I can get John 3:16 done if you get me started. But you know, they would memorize this whole thing. And so you'd want to pick somebody who really kind of knew. But instead, Jesus doesn't seem to pick that people who are real smart. And we'll see later, they're not. but he just kind of picks these guys. And, you know, it's funny because I think sometimes religious knowledge gets in the way of the action required by genuine faith. You can grow up in church. You can know the right things, right? You could know when to sit and when to stand. You could understand the theology of communion. You could probably write a better essay than what we do. You could probably do a better job of speaking than I do every week. But you can have this knowledge, but sometimes it's hard to translate that to action. We often talk about, and then someone actually wrote an article using it, and I was like, I should have written that article first. You know, hashtag Jesus-y, because we're supposed to live and act like Jesus. And that's the point of following Jesus. It was so that the disciples could eventually live and act like Jesus. And so we as an extension, you know, we're supposed to live and act like Jesus. So we're supposed to be hashtag Jesus-y versus hashtag Noah-lotty. You know, because you can have a lot of religious knowledge. I had a professor. I liked him. We were friends. He knew more about things of the Bible at that point than I had ever even thought about, you know, but absolutely no faith at all. And it was kind of funny because I remember we were friends and he was like, man, I wish I had your faith. And I'm thinking, I wish I had your knowledge, but I don't want to give up my faith. You know, and some people almost think it's like an either or. But they're really, they're not people who maybe know a lot. And I think a lot of times people get hashtag churchy, but not hashtag Jesus-y. Because you can go to church, you can play the game, you can look the part, you know, I'm not going to make fun of people wearing nice clothes like Devin. Devin and I have a running joke. Devin and I are good friends, but Devin always dresses better than me. I mean, for me, I didn't wear a t-shirt today. I dressed up. These are my best jeans. Devin always dresses better than me, but you can dress up and look like Devin. No, but you can play the part. You know what I mean? Because you can go to a church that's not dressy and still kind of dress what looks cool for that. It's not about the clothes you wear, but you kind of know the things. And then I go to churches that have all kinds of traditions and things. And a lot of times, I said it last week, people who are reacting against, I don't want to follow Jesus because it's this and that and that. I'm not into Christianity because it's this and this and that. It's not anything to do with Jesus. It's not anything to do with Christianity. It's about churchianity and all these things that we make it out to be. And so sometimes knowing the right things to do can actually be a hindrance in getting to know who Jesus really is and learning to live and act like him. And so we have this. Jesus says, you know, hey, you know, we're going to have you, you know, kind of fish for people. Now, we know the outcome. If you're in church, you've probably at least heard of this Jesus guy. You know, you know, maybe you haven't. We're going to talk about him. but you've probably at least heard of this thing called Christianity. Or maybe you just saw the cool new sign out front and thought, I'm going to swing in this week. You know, but, you know, we kind of know it. So it seems like a good deal. But this is early on. He hasn't done much. And, you know, it's interesting. This is like, if you're a business person, you might know this story. There's this guy named Steve Jobs. Anyone know what company? Apple, not Pear. Apple. And so this guy named Apple. If you want people messed up, like, I almost came up here without my microphone again today. I don't know what it is. I'm like, we're about to walk up there, and I'm like, oh, microphone. So if you want a church full of people who mess up, we're your place. I'm going to get up here some week, and they're going to be trying to turn it up, and I'm like, oh, I didn't put it on. Even though they put it in the right place every week for me. But it's the sound guy's fault, because it's always the sound guy's fault. You know, it's doesn't matter what happened, you know. That's a running joke. We'll just run away with that right now. But so Steve Jobs, the guy named John Sculley, he was the CEO of Pepsi. And so when Apple was a startup, he goes to him, he's trying to convince him, the CEO of Pepsi, to come to this startup. And he says, you know, do you want to sell sugar water for the rest of your life, or do you want to come with me and change the world? And he eventually does it. At the time, did that look like a smart decision? No. You're the CEO of Pepsi, and you're leaving for this tiny little weird startup that's, you know, got a fruit that's like a bite out of it, you know, I don't know. It didn't seem like a thing, but, you know, it seemed crazy to leave this solid business for something far less certain. Now, we know the outcome. It's a well-known company. I'm currently reading off a device made by that company. and so we know the outcome, so it seems like a good deal. And see, the disciples, it probably seemed a little crazy because they had a good deal. They had a business. They had a job. They were catching fish. And then this guy shows up, and he's like, hey, follow me. And they're like, okay. Let's go. It's kind of funny because it's they go from something certain to something less certain. It probably, you know, seemed crazy to their families. And it was a sacrifice to go and do this. You know, we may not follow Jesus around today, but really it's still that same call to follow Jesus, to become like him. You know, I was trying to think of other, you know, because they're fisher and fisher of men, and it's funny because people, if you hear sermons on this, I think people go way too far with, oh, well, fish represented this and, you know, that, and it's like, you know, to bring the fish from the sea was considered dark and scary, you know, all this kind of stuff. I don't know. That seems a little far-fetched for me. I think if they'd been bankers, he would have said, you know, Jesus would have been like, hey, let me show you the best investment. You know, if they've been a writer, let me show you how to write the best story you've ever heard. Mechanic, let me show you how to fix the world. And so being a disciple means becoming like Jesus and then ultimately sharing that message with the world, sharing that life with the world. And so it says, at once they left their nets and followed him. So they just kind of picked up. Now, we think of this, when you read this the first time, if you're reading the book of Mark, you're thinking Jedi mind trick. Maybe you're not. I was. This is the rabbi you're looking for. Come along. Because they just appear to leave everything with nothing. But, you know, they really, if we look at some of the other accounts, we see in John 1, they'd had some interaction with them. But I think, you know, it's really kind of, they're just coming to a point where they have to decide. Am I going to follow or am I going to live my normal life? I am notoriously indecisive. I posted something in the Facebook group the other day, yesterday. I was working on signage, which little things. We moved into a big building, and it's really a little confusing. Anyone ever get confused in this building now? We're trying to put up signage that makes sense, because the longer you're here, the more it makes sense. Oh, yeah, just go down the secret staircase, down the little hallway, open a door that's not really a door, to pull a lever, to open another door. No, I'm kidding. But, it feels like that the first time you're in here, because it's kind of like crazy. So we're working on signage, and I'm thinking, you know, ladies' room. And I couldn't decide whether to leave the apostrophe in or take it out, because, you know, technically it should have it in there. So, you know, and I overthink it. People are like, don't overthink it. I'm like, telling Jeff not to overthink something. Like, I think about these things. We were at a restaurant last night. I'm like, oh my gosh, there's so many decisions. I end up just getting a burger most of the time because I'm like, there's just too many options. Give me a burger and some bacon and I will be good. And I like hot, so throw some sriracha in there. We're all good. You know, and that's why I have to have, like, I have to go to, like, you know, you go to Taco Bell or something. This sermon brought to you by Taco Bell. like, there's so many combinations and permutations you can do of meals, but I'm like, so I have to just choose one of, like, the six or seven value things, you know, or what's the big box this week, you know. I don't like to choose. I'm actually wearing black today, though, because, you know, someone teases me that every time. I almost always wear black. It's not that I'm depressed. It's not even just that it's slimming. It's just I don't like to think a lot, so all my shirts are kind of very much the same, and it's like black or a really dark shade of gray, but this one is black but with a little extra gray in there for you. But and this is how I choose my clothes. So if I wear the same shirt week to week, don't worry, we've laundered it. But I just pick out whatever's first in the rack. So I don't like to think about things because I think about, I'm buying a trash can. We're buying trash cans when Deepwater first started. I was analyzing where the trash cans were going to be, how much trash they'd have in them, what the cost of certain trash bag liners would be, you know, and then just think about the ecological impact of that. And like, that's how I think. At some point, I just have to go, no, just go buy a trash can. You know, because some of you, and that's the kind of thing. There's all these kind of decisions and things that are going on here. And you could, with Jesus, be forever thinking about all those things. Well, do I want to follow Jesus? I'm kind of thinking about this. And, you know, and this is, it really just came to a point where the disciples had to go, I'm in. I'm in or I'm out. I'm gonna follow Jesus. And so, it says in verse 19, when they had gone down a little further, he saw James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John in a boat preparing their nets. Without delay, he called them, and they left their father Zebedee in the boat with the hired men and followed him. I always picture him like dad. They just left dad in the boat. I don't know. It's kind of funny to me. And so, you know, Peter and Andrew kind of leave their occupation, but they leave their dad in the boat. And I kind of wonder, why do they mention his father? I think that's really show, you know, they're kind of cutting some family ties. You know, I get to travel to Africa a bit, and I've told you this story, but it's funny because when you talk to them, you know, they have enough interaction with American culture that they're confused when you ask them questions, too. Because, like, I remember asking my friend Circatus, I was like, hey, you know, how's your family? And she's like, are you asking me if I'm married and kids? No, I'm like, no, I'm asking you about your father, because that's sort of appropriate there. I remember it comes off weird sometimes, though, for Americans. One of my students, he's like, so, is your father alive? I'm like, it's awkward if he's not. Like, I know what they're asking, but your family ties, where you're from, are so important. But, you know, they're willing to jump out of the boat even with the family ties there, and probably, you know, a bit of a business and all that security, but they're willing to just kind of drop it and go. It's interesting for me because, again, we're doing Mark. Now, in Matthew, they tell us, well, actually they don't, but, you know, it's like Luke, for instance. You know, if you remember our first weekend here, we preached something, I think I called it Still Deep Water, because, you know, we get this, the account of this in Luke is where we get the name for the church, because, you know, it has them catching more fish. They throw out, you know, Jesus tells them to go out into deep water. We thought, man, that's a great name for a church. And so we always want to be a church that goes out where people are, goes out and connects. So it's been this reminder that we're not about, you know, I mean, we love church. I get over, you know, I hate calling the building church. I will awkwardly word things to not call this the church. I'll call it the church building, because, you know, here the church, here's the steeple, open up, see all the people. Lies. Because this is the church. You know, this building is cool. I'm liking the new building. But you know, it's about the people. It's so, you know, there's all this kind of, all these details and everything in the other account. And I think sometimes one of the reasons I've studied Mark a bit, but I think one of the things that frustrated me with Mark sometimes is he leaves out details. And again, I'm an indecisive person, so I want all the details before I make a decision. And so it's kind of been kind of like, why did he leave that off? But, you know, I think that's really kind of the point. Now, if you know me, if I'm telling you a story, I'm probably taking a 5-minute story and telling it to you in 10 minutes. I'm going to expand it. My wife, a little more concise. She'll take a 5-minute story and give it to you in one line. and really, that's kind of, you know, and if you have kids, you see this sometimes. You pick up the kids from school, you know, how was your day? You have one kid who's like, fine. Anyone have that kid? And then you have the other kid who's like, oh, 35 minutes later, you're like, how was your day at school? Fine. Okay. Two words versus 20 minutes. And that's sort of the thing here. It's so, you know, Mark is very concise, and I think it's because he just gets the point. He's concentrating on this moment to say, you have to make a decision. There's this decision made. You know, are you going to follow or are you not? And really, that's how life comes down. You know, are you going to follow or are you not? You know, with all the details, all the story, that's cool. But am I going to make this commitment to follow Jesus? Am I going to become like him? Am I going to then try to be a part of the kingdom and all the things that he does? We're going to continue down in verse 21. He says this. They went to Capernaum. When the Sabbath came, Jesus went into the synagogue and began to teach. Now, Capernaum is kind of like, it becomes their ministry base. It's the hometown of some of the disciples. And so, and the Sabbath was, in those days, you know, it was Saturday. Christians eventually switched, most of us, to Sunday because, you know, that's when Jesus was resurrected. And so we switched at some point, and it's a lot of history behind that. And originally it's this day of rest, and pretty much the only thing you would do, maybe like 1950s America was like this with church, you know, pretty much the only thing you did was like go to church and... Well, there days you go to synagogue and you know you kind of hung out. You couldn't work. There's all kinds of rules and stuff, which we'll get to some of those because Jesus seems to have this affinity for doing cool things on the Sabbath just to irritate people. It says and what a synagogue was, you know, in some Jewish traditions now they call it temple, but really there's one temple in Jerusalem, and not everyone could walk that far and to get there on, you know, the Sabbath on Saturday. And so you have these little synagogues popping up, and it's actually interesting. Archaeologically, they're finding more in that whole area that they didn't think existed. People are like, oh, well, you know, it says Jesus was preaching in synagogues, but there really weren't any there. And then they're like, oh, look, another one we found. And you can actually find the one. You can go to the one in Capernaum, although it kind of collapsed, and there's another one built on top of it. If you like archaeology, we'll talk later. But, you know, and so a lot of what we do in church, this meeting we call church, is modeled after the synagogue. You may or may not realize that. And so a lot of times what would happen is, you know, a scripture would be read, and then any male over 30 could then kind of make comment or kind of the preaching. Now, if you know anything about the Quaker tradition, that's kind of, you know, I have friends who are Quakers, and I have a guy who I lived kind of next door to in Pittsburgh, you know, they go to a church where, you know, you read the scripture and everyone sits there, and then like kind of like popcorn, you pop up if you want to say something. And so they would kind of like then, you know, Jewish man over 30 could comment after the reading. So Jesus there, and he's going to teach. And it says, you know, he begins to teach with authority. And really, there's something about the way he taught that people said, man, this guy, he's teaching in an authoritative way. And some of that was the tradition in those days when you taught was to go, well, Rabbi Akiba said this and Rabbi the other. You know, so you're kind of like all this, like kind of like footnotes. And if you're like me, I like academic stuff. So I like footnotes. I'm the guy who reads the footnotes when you're reading something. I'm the guy who reads the book in the footnote later. I like footnotes, and I like scholarly stuff. It's the way I'm wired. But not everyone is. But that was kind of in the day, they would just be like, well, this person has said this. And so Jesus is just getting up just plainly talking about the scriptures. And people are like, whoa, this guy speaks with an authority that we really haven't seen before. It says then, verse 23, just then a man in their synagogue who was possessed by an impure spirit cried out, what do you want with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know you, who you are, the Holy One of God. Cried out. Now, picture that today. It'd be like, no, sorry, John. But it'd be like John suddenly just screaming out in the middle of the sermon, "Who are you? Have you come to destroy us?" And we'd all be a little freaked out, right? Like, even if you're like, okay, with I believe in demonic stuff, you're thinking it's probably not going to happen in church. Or maybe some of you are thinking that's where it's going to happen. And so there's this kind of this crazy moment. And these days, like, if you go to most churches, the ushers would grab them and drag them out the back, I think. But in this moment, people, I picture people kind of freaked out because this is not a normal thing. Like, you know, this is unusual. You know, sometimes you read the Bible stories, you're like, oh, yeah, so demons stood up in church. What? That's kind of crazy. And so, you know, and it's kind of funny because the demon seems to recognize Jesus' authority, and then scholars are kind of like trying to debate why he's saying this, because sometimes in those days they thought if you declared who somebody is, you kind of had power over them, and all this kind of stuff. You'll read all kinds of things. You'll hear all kinds of things in sermons. But the point is, the demon sort of recognizes Jesus' authority and who he is, and Jesus says to him, "Be quiet." Jesus said sternly, "Come out of him." The impure spirit shook the man violently and came out of him with a shriek. And I think that's funny because we wouldn't be like, "Be quiet." We would be like, "Post this on Instagram." You know what I mean? Like, we're like, "Selfie with the demon guy." We're like shooting videos, you know? It's like, we're just like, selfies with a demon-possessed guy and viral videos. We're thinking, but Jesus demonstrates his power, not for likes on social media, but as this act of compassion. And it really is this demonstration of his power. I don't just speak authoritatively. I'm showing my authority, because when a demon shows up, I'm like, "Get out." And he does. Jesus doesn't use, you know, special incantations or weird charms or all the things that you even see today that they had in those days, but he just says, "Get out. You're out of here. You're out." It's like an umpire. And I imagine, you know, people are a little freaked out. It says the people were all so amazed, they asked each other, "What is this, a new teaching? And with authority? He even gives orders to impure spirits, and they obey him." News about him spread quickly over the whole region of Galilee. They're like, "What is this?" You know, they were freaked out. I mean, you would be too if, like, you know, depending on your background, maybe some of you would think this is normal, but if right now I was like, "Okay, now I want the demon-possessed people to come forward, and we just start doing some crazy stuff," some of you would be like, "Awesome," some of you would be filming it, and some of you would be heading out the door as quickly as you could, act like you're going to the bathroom and go out the side door. You know, it's got kind of this craziness to it. It's just this demonstration of Jesus' authority and power. And you know, Jesus heals the guy with a demon because ultimately that's what Jesus comes to do. Jesus comes to set people free. You know, he sets us free from sin, and he offers us this new life. And that means it's free from the sin that entangles and holds us down. I've used this example before. I used to work in a factory, and I made, you know, the black plastic that goes out in the fields over everything. I made that, but I was low man on the totem pole at the factory, which meant, like, I was the guy when they had the nasty job. Like, the main operator was like, "Okay, Jeff, you fix this. You've been working for us for a day. You know how to do this." And so, you know, I'm, like, in the back with the extruder, and I'm cutting off this plastic. My job is to kick the plastic away out of the big, like, when it cools down a little bit. Well, my boots got stuck in it. Next thing you know, I'm stuck in molten plastic everywhere. I had to get out of my boots and jump out. And then I'm running into the break room, like, you know, which you're not supposed to be there without steel toes, and I was, because now I'm barefoot. And I'm like, "I need a little help," because I just got stuck in the goo. And that's, Jesus comes to get us unstuck from the goo. All the sin and the things that we bring into our lives because we think they're going to be fun. It's going to be great. Well, this feels so good. I like this. But ultimately, it doesn't lead to something that's healthy. It leads to death. And often, sometimes, things we try and we grab and we think it's going to be good, then it becomes something that we're stuck in. Sin becomes things that we just can't get out of. And so Jesus comes to give us life and to free us from this junk. And then, you know, he gives us this full and new life. And we've said this before, but I think You know, we think sometimes, like David posted a picture of the engine this morning, because, you know, someone hadn't, with the truck he's working on, he took it apart, and someone hadn't properly changed the oil. And you could see the effect of that is the engine isn't as effective anymore. And it's something, you know, you got to fix. And a lot of times we put stuff into our cars, metaphorically, into our life that we think are going to be good. We think this is going to be great. This is going to be so much fun. But it doesn't. It leads to damage. It leads to hurt. It leads to and so we sometimes think, oh, well, you know, we don't like the word sin. We kind of, oh, you know, you don't understand. It's not like it is today. And I can do this and I can do that. But it doesn't bring you freedom. It brings death. It brings pain. And so Jesus is coming to free people, and this healing of the demon-possessed guy, really, it shows that. And really, I think the bottom line of this whole thing is just like Mark. Mark cuts away everything. He cuts away the details, and he kind of brings it down to, are you going to follow or not? And it's really the question for all of us. You know, are we going to follow or not? Decisions have consequences in our lives. Now, there's a lot of big decisions, like, we're celebrating Martin Luther King Day on Monday. Anyone know that? It's the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, too. I like to point out, you know, it's interesting because the famous speech, when I say Martin Luther King, what do you think? You know, he almost didn't use that day. He'd kind of used the line a few other places, and he'd started into his speech, and at some point, I think it was Mahalia Jackson, she said, so, tell him about the dream, and he's like, oh yeah, that line I used, and so he starts into this, I have a dream, it's out of his notes, he just started preaching this, and that's this iconic message for us about this dream about the way America should look. And, you know, I was reading about the Titanic. It, you know, Titanic is not just a Leonardo DiCaprio film, it really happened. A lot of the younger generation did not know that there was a ship called the Titanic. I was like, seriously? Our public school system failing us again. But, you know, Titanic, you know, they had a last-minute crew change, and the guy forgot to give them the key that had the binoculars in it to the cabinet, and so they were looking without binoculars. I would have torn that binocular cap. I read that. I don't know. Maybe it's not a lot. Maybe it's a lie. World War I. Archduke Ferdinand shot. You know why he was shot? They tried to blow up his car. He told the driver to take another way. Driver takes the wrong way. They drove by the guy who had just blown up the car. And so he gets killed. One wrong turn. World War I. You know, World War II, it was interesting. I was reading, I don't know if they knew this, when they planned, you know, the invasion in Europe. You know, Rommel went on vacation, the German general, for his wife's birthday, right at the time D-Day happens. Would it be different if Rommel had been there? He was an expert at war. And so sometimes decisions have big consequences that we don't realize. Yeah, and, you know, one wrong turn, World War I. You know, at some moments in your life, make big things. Like, it changes the course of your life. When you get out of high school, you decide on what to do, that really changes your life, right? You know, and don't worry, you can change it a bunch of times now. It's not like back in the day where you had to stay one job forever. But, you know, you decide on a career, it's a big thing. Risk asking that girl out. That's a big thing. Especially if you then, you know, have to risk to ask her to marry you. I was terrified asking my wife to marry me. Because most of the guys know we marry up. You know, and I was like, I'd only dated her 9 years. I wasn't sure, you know, what's she going to say? I know, why was I nervous if she put up with me that long? Of course, maybe it was like one of those moments she's like, no, I've had enough. Like, you're... some of our friends helped us with planting the church. They, you know, we always joked. She married. She was like, "Oh, he'd be a fun summer boyfriend." She worked with him, and now they're married and have kids. And you know, but you know, there's these big kind of decisions. You know, and it's really, this could be that kind of moment in your life. You know, what's the thing that you want to hold on to that really keeps you from following? What's that thing? And even if you've been following for a while, what's that thing that you want to hold on to that makes it so you can't follow? I think of it a lot. When, you know, I like hiking, and you know, in our day when you went hiking, it was like. When we were younger, we had like 85-pound packs and stuff, and, you know, it was, it was like squatting for, you know, days. but now it's like ultralight and everything. And I think, you know, if you go hiking, you want as light a pack as possible, right? Because it's heavy. And if you're walking a lot, it gets really, really heavy. And really, what we do is we stick stuff in our backpack. We hold on to these things that we think are going to be good, that we think we're going to need, that we think are going to bring us life, and ultimately they just weigh us down. You know, Jesus said to follow him, we need to get rid of those backpacks. We need to just walk. And, you know, is it really worth it? Is that thing you're holding on to that keeps you from following Jesus worth it? You know, and who or what you follow ultimately will determine where your life ends up. You know, and it's easy to get off track. I used to cut grass a lot. In fact, when we were starting the church, I was doing it. And I'd be 8 hours on this big, which is awesome, 360 diesel power mower. I mean, I listened to a lot of podcasts because my mind was blank. But, you know, if I didn't, you know, it was easy to kind of get bored, 8 hours on a mower. It sounds like a good thing at first, but you know, about hour two, you're like, oh my gosh, I got six more. But, you know, when I was cutting large fields, and, like, I had to kind of look across and pick a point. Because if I just kind of, like, followed, like, the mower, looked just ahead of me, what happened? It was like, wah, 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 wah. And it was kind of embarrassing, you know, when your supervisor's like, what are they? You know, and so you'd kind of pick a point and just drive, and then you get nice and straight lines. And that's what it is with following Jesus. You really need to kind of look and follow Jesus without getting your eyes off it. Because if you follow Jesus for a while, sometimes we get our eyes off him. We go in different directions. We pull left. We pull right. It really, you know, are we following Jesus? And there always has to be this recalibration where we go, what are the things in my life that are keeping me from following? You know, Jesus calls us to this life of discipleship, but it's better than any life. It's better than fishing. They were probably very happy fishing. They were happy if they were, you know, kind of better off maybe, and they were fishing, and they had people working for them. Like James and John, you know, left their father and the hired men. So they definitely were probably a little up the step there. But ultimately, they have a better life. It's this call to follow Jesus. You know, how will you respond to his call to follow? You know, how will you then continue to respond to his call?